You are listening to The Potato Podcast, presented by Columbia Media Group. This episode is sponsored by GroupAg, post-harvest and storage specialists. Contact GroupAg at 208-356-7800. It's 208-356-7800. In today's episode, Dave speaks with Cam Quarles, the Vice President of Public Policy for the National Potato Council. He was able to join us by phone from his office in Washington, D.C. They discuss how the Trump administration's tariffs are affecting the potato industry.
Hello, and thank you for joining the Potato Podcast. Today, we have a very special guest. Cam Quarles from the National Potato Council has agreed to talk to us today about what's going on with tariffs, trade issues, NAFTA, and a bunch more confusing things that we hope he's going to be able to clear up for us. Cam, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Dave. We'll do our best to clear things up.
All right. Well, thank you for coming on with us today. Want to give a little bit of background on the NPC. So for those that aren't familiar with the NPC, it was formed in 1948 and provides a unified voice for the U.S. potato industry in Washington, D.C. They work on legislative, regulatory, environmental, and trade issues for the potato industry and its growers. They play a significant role in influencing policy that directly affects the U.S. growers' ability to compete both domestically and globally. And that's what we'll be talking about today, is competing globally. And to kind of set the stage, I want to read one more thing here. This is a statement from American Farm Bureau Federation, and kind of what their take is on tariffs. Farm Bureau urges our trade officials to engage in discussions with our trade partners to resolve trade concerns before resorting to tariffs. Tariffs targeting our largest agricultural export markets have resulted in retaliation against U.S. farmers, ranchers, and agricultural and food businesses across the country. At this time of particular stress in the agricultural economy, expanding market opportunities for farmers and ranchers must be a priority for our trade efforts. So there you have it. Cam, I'm assuming that kind of goes in with what NPC thinks as well, right?
Yeah, that's consistent with what we've been saying to folks. We recognize that the president is trying to generate some wins for the U.S. on trade, kind of across the spectrum of the U.S. economy. The challenge that we have is ensuring that those wins are delivered in a way that's equitable and that doesn't cause any long-term harm to some pretty valuable export markets that we have for the potato industry, and I think for agriculture broadly. So, and I know that that's not their intention at the outset. You know, we're taking a pretty active role with them in trying to understand what the strategy is for the short term, for the long term, and then advising them as to what the impact can be if this series of disputes drags on a while.
Okay, so let's talk about these disputes. What do we have with NAFTA right now? And I think Mexico and the U.S. have come to an agreement and waiting on Canada as of today, September 27th. Is that right?
That's right. A couple of weeks ago, there was an announcement that the U.S. and Mexico had a tentative deal on a new NAFTA. Some people are calling it NAFTA 2.0. However, the U.S.-Mexico portion of that is obviously only a part of what is currently a trilateral agreement. Canada has not been able to come to agreement with the U.S. The clock is ticking. By the end of September, the administration needs to provide formal notice and begin the process with Congress of ratifying whatever this new deal is, or else they will lose the ability to sign it with the existing Mexican administration in place. Mexico has just recently had elections. They will have a new president here beginning in December. And so they wanted to finalize this deal before the new administration took its place.
So they've got 3 days to get this done, basically.
They are running out of time to take these necessary steps in that process.
So what are some more problems with the trade disputes? I mean, talk to us a little bit about the TPP and what's happening with China. Is China a big player here?
Sure. So you have several different issues that are going on that have all sort of collided together. One, the United States has said they're not going to go forward with an agreement that was negotiated over the past few years called the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. That included a number of different countries in the Pacific Rim. Japan was a leader in that. Would have impacted a number of different export markets. TPP, despite issues that the administration may have in other places, it was pretty good for agriculture across the board. And fortunately, in this U.S.-Mexico agreement that has been announced, they took one of the key provisions for agriculture that impacts potatoes and impacts specialty crops broadly, and included it in that Mexico deal. So that provision specifically deals with how with reducing foreign governments' abilities to use pest and disease issues to obstruct trade. It allows we call it an SPS plus, a sanitary and phytosanitary agreement plus measure, which forces governments to use sound science, use the best available science, and more rapidly come to reasonable decisions on how they deal with pest and disease issues. A lot of those pest and disease issues are really for agriculture. Those are the huge stumbling blocks that keep you out of markets for years or even decades. So we think that's a pretty good thing. Broadly, TPP is not going to go forward. The administration has said they're not going to ratify that. But just in the last 24 hours or so, they have said that they will start negotiations with Japan on a bilateral agreement. That is a good thing from our perspective. If they maintain the benefits that existed under TPP with Japan, we think that will be quite valuable. Japan is currently our largest export market for the potato industry, over $370 million a year in all different types of potato exports go to Japan. So we would like to see that number increase, obviously.
Obviously. What about Mexico as far as that number goes? I mean, they're a big export market as well, are they not?
They are. When you look at the two NAFTA countries, so Japan is our number one export market. Canada is our number two export market, and Mexico is our number three export market. So when you start talking about NAFTA, it gets our attention in a hurry. Right now, you know, this new agreement is it's only with one of those countries, and some people have jokingly said that the new agreement, if Canada didn't come in, the new agreement should be called HAFTA instead of NAFTA, since it's only one of the two. We'll see how that all evolves if they're able to come to some type of agreement with Canada and get that back on the rails. One of the issues that is impacting our Mexican exports right now is related to these tariffs that have been put in place by the United States. One set of those tariffs directly impacts China. They're called the Section 301 tariffs. The other ones are on steel and aluminum. They're called Section 232 tariffs. When those steel and aluminum tariffs went on, it caused Mexico to retaliate against a host of products, and one of them is frozen French fries. That is nearly $150 million a year market in just that one commodity going to Mexico. And so that right now has, as a result of those retaliatory tariffs, those exports are vulnerable. And we're obviously focusing a lot of attention on how that gets resolved and how long these tariffs are going to remain in place.
So are those tariffs are in place right now with Mexico, and then hopefully with this new modified TPP, those will fall away.
With the new modified NAFTA, that is the tricky part of this. Unfortunately, those tariffs would not be impacted by this new U.S.-Mexico deal, whatever they call this revised NAFTA. Those are separate and distinct from that agreement. So, because they were put on in response to the U.S. Steel and aluminum tariffs. So we're trying to understand from the administration what's the process going forward for removing those tariffs. Ultimately, Mexico would say our action against potatoes and a variety of different things was in response to the U.S. action. And so the two sides are going to have to move at the same time to resolve it.
Okay. What currently is going on with Mexico? Are the retaliations in effect right now?
The steel and aluminum tariffs are in effect now, and so the retaliation is in effect. We went from a zero duty to a 20% duty on U.S. exports, the frozen fry exports going to Mexico. There also is this ongoing issue, which is not impacted by the NAFTA negotiations, the issue of fresh market access for potatoes to Mexico. That has gone on for a number of years, but unfortunately, it is outside of the scope of these trade agreements to resolve that issue.
Yeah, that's been on again, off again for quite a while. And right now, where does that stand?
So what's happened is the Mexican government has taken the steps necessary to open their market to U.S. fresh potato exports. The challenge is when the Mexican government took that action, they were immediately sued by their domestic industry. Those lawsuits blocked the regulatory process in Mexico to allow U.S. exports to come into the entirety of the country. And so they're working through the court system right now to resolve the issues that the lawsuits have called into question in regard to the Mexican government's authority to take this action. At some point, the legal process will result in a decision. We believe that the Mexican government should have the right to make a decision about imports coming into their country. Certainly the U.S. government has the right to make determinations about agricultural imports coming into our country. And, you know, ultimately there needs to be a firm decision affirming that power exists. At that time, we're confident that the market will eventually be opened up, yes, fully to U.S. fresh potato exports.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to that day. Let's go back to the NAFTA and retaliation for a minute. the trade mitigation program that the administration announced. I mean, I've seen all kinds of numbers that there was like $200 million for marketing, and the total program itself, I think, was like $4 billion. Let's talk about that. How much of that money and is actually going to benefit our industry, the potato industry?
Yeah, so you have three different buckets of programs that the administration has announced to deal with the impact, the overall impact of the this trade, we'll call it this tariff crisis that we're dealing with right now. One program is very much like the ongoing farm subsidy programs that provide direct payments to producers of certain what we call program crops. The second bucket goes for export promotion, and then the third will buy surplus commodities that are on the market. Altogether, the administration views that trade program, this trade mitigation program, as a way to soften what they recognize as a significant amount of pain across all of U.S. agriculture due to the loss of these export markets. Potatoes, currently we participate in the export USDA's export promotion programs in several different ways. That's Potatoes USA that conducts those activities in opening up new markets and working to promote U.S. potato exports in those markets. Also, our surplus potatoes would be eligible for this surplus commodity buy program in the mitigation program. The challenge is you have a finite amount of resources that USDA has to deal with these issues, and there's just a lot of demand out there because these export markets are so valuable. As we were talking earlier, the just for frozen French fries going to Mexico, that is nearly $150 million a year market. Well, our existing annual export, the largest export promotion program that we have is $200 million annually, and that's for all of U.S. agriculture. So you can see just one numbers segment of one commodity, yeah, the numbers, they get overwhelming really, really quickly. And so that's kind of why, even though we appreciate that the administration is trying to set these programs up in order to minimize the pain, if this dispute drags on a long-term basis, it's nearly impossible to avoid that pain through some type of government payout. It's just, the numbers are just too big.
Right. Where does the authority come from for this trade mitigation program?
The USDA maintains what's called the Commodity Credit Corporation, which effectively it's a revolving fund that is replenished by Congress every year. It's about $35 billion in total, and they have the ability to tap that for a variety of different purposes. And so the mitigation program would come out of that revolving fund. The good news for that is we're currently negotiating a farm bill right now and hoping that Congress and the administration are able to get together on that. The cost for this mitigation program would not come out of the farm bill. So it would be an addition.
So you're talking $5 billion, but in reality, when it comes down to trickle down, it's very little for the potato industry in general, and to the grower themselves, even less. Is that a fair statement?
That is a fair statement. It is hard, regardless of what you're producing out in the U.S. agricultural economy. It's hard to see how folks are going to be able to be made whole given the gravity of the export, the value of the export markets that that they send their product to.
So what is the end game here? Where would MPC like to see this end up and be finalized?
You've really asked the multi-$100 million question or $1 billion question if you're talking about all of U.S. agriculture. We understand what the administration is doing in trying to create leverage with foreign governments to affect change, make them change their policies toward our exports, not just in agriculture, but across the U.S. economy. The question is, if that in the short term creates action that results in a positive outcome, then I think people will understand it will create some short-term pain, but if there's a long-term benefit there, I think farmers are patriots. They respect the broad plan there. The question is whether or not this becomes, rather than a short-term strategy, does it drag on for a long time? If it becomes a long-term strategy, someone used the metaphor one time, there's no hole in the water when you get out of the pool. And much like in export markets, when the U.S. climbs out of an export market or walks away from it, other countries will be very willing to fill those gaps. There are valuable consumers around the world that other foreign farmers want to sell to just as much as we do.
Sure.
And if we step back from those markets, they will be filled. And then how difficult is it to claw your way back into markets that you once held onto? And in some cases, you were the preeminent player in those markets. So ultimately, we are hopeful, much like that statement that you read from Farm Bureau, we want folks to get back to the table, negotiate a good, equitable outcome that delivers real benefits for U.S. producers.
Well, these are very complex topics we've been discussing today, and from our perspective here, we're glad that we have you folks in Washington, D.C. and on the Hill working for us and keeping us aware of what's going on.
So thanks very much, Dave. I enjoyed talking to you, and I hope this was useful and provided a little bit of clarity on, as you say, a very complicated set of issues that we're dealing with in exports right now.
Yeah, so it was definitely informative, and I want to thank you for coming on today. And I also have a couple more questions for you, if you don't mind. We're doing
Absolutely.
A new segment here. Like I said, we've been talking about pretty serious and complex issues, so I thought I would lighten the mood up a little bit. This is a surprise for Cam, but this is we're going to call this "Will the Real Cam Quarles Please Stand Up?" Are you willing to play along with me in this game here?
Okay, I'm willing to play. Let's go.
All right, here we go. Where are you from, Cam?
I grew up in the citrus industry in California, so just north of Los Angeles.
Okay. What are your hobbies? What do you like to do in your spare time?
So when I was a kid, I was a competitive golfer. I had a lot of fun doing that, and that's a sport you can keep doing on into well into adulthood. So I continue to do that around here in Washington, D.C. I also my daughter and I enjoy scuba diving. So we can find a warm place to go scuba dive, we do that.
Yeah, very nice. That sounds like a great time. I can't imagine you have a lot of time for golf there. And what's it like living in Washington, D.C.?
Well, it's as you can imagine, it's a little chaotic right now. There's a lot of things
yes.
a lot of things happening. We live right on Capitol Hill, so we see there's you can walk about a half a mile in any direction, and you could run into the president's motorcade or a member of Congress or somebody some famous sports star lobbying Congress on some bill. So it's kind of fun. There's always something going on. It is from time to time a very intense environment, though, as you can imagine. There's a lot of people who are here trying to get things right, and they're, you know, in it professionally, they're trying to push their agendas around, and we want to make sure potatoes get their fair share. So we spend a lot of time doing that too.
Sounds like an exciting place to live, just a slight bit more than Roberts, Idaho. what's your favorite sports team?
I would have to say that I have been a diehard Washington Capitals fan for a very long time.
Oh,
and even though
we were
thank you. Even though we were convinced that they were cursed for a number of years, they broke that curse this summer. So that was pretty exciting. Beyond that, I grew up a kid as an LA Rams fan, so I'm glad they're back playing in Los Angeles.
Well, the Rams are looking amazing this year. So if you could drink something from the Stanley Cup, what would it be?
If I could drink something from the Stanley Cup, it would probably be a good Belgian beer.
Okay. Last question. Thanks for enduring my painful questions here. What did you want to be when you grew up?
When I was a young kid, I thought I was going to go on the PGA Tour. That was my major focus. So I still look at envy with some of the guys that I used to play with who now are getting pretty close to getting on the Senior Tour. But at the time, I was kind of hopeful. That seemed like a pretty good career to me. But my dad was. He represented the citrus industry both in Washington and out in California for years and years, and I kind of took on my love of I kind of generally think government can be a little challenging and maybe not quite get it right with the farmers, with the issues that the farmers care about. And so I kind of took on a love of that as I got out of school, and I've represented the potato industry for nearly 10 years now back here in Washington, and I enjoy it. We work on a lot of good issues, so I'm kind of doing the thing that I enjoy the most.
That's awesome. Cam Quarles, thank you so much for coming on the Potato Podcast today. I'll never play golf with you, but I will look forward to seeing you in the future.
Well, we might be able to drink a beer out of some kind of cup in the future. Thanks,
I could
Dave.
Probably do that.
Yes,
thanks,
sir.
Thanks again.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are for informational purposes only, and solely those of the podcast participants, contributors, and guests. They do not constitute an endorsement by or necessarily represent the views of Columbia Media Group or its affiliates.